Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hobbs and Friends of the OSR. I'm your host, Jason Hobbs, and this is one of the Misdirected Mark Network's kids podcast episodes, and I've got two awesome guests with me. The first is Brett, What's My Surname B? And Corey DM Kojo Gosman. So how you guys doing?
Great.
Pretty good, man. Nice to be here.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Awesome. I know that you had no interest in being on at all, Corey, so I had to, you know, pull your teeth and twist your arm to get you on here. So let's start with you, Brett. Obviously, the gaming and BS people know who you are, but...
Yeah, so I'm the B in gaming and BS. So for those of you who don't know what that is, that's Brett is the B there, not necessarily the... Well, I could be the bull and Sean could be the other part. That could work, too. But anyway, so that's my gig over there. Let's see, I do that, and through that piece then is how I get hooked up with guys like Scott Hubbs here and the guys at Misdirected Mark. I meet all those people and then cool folks like Corey and get involved in GameholeCon. Now I'm ending up running a convention in my hometown every January now. So that's another thing I do.
You're on that Actual Play podcast too. Do you want to pimp that or say anything about that?
Yeah, oh yeah, the Streets of Avalon. Oh yeah, I should totally do that. Streets of Avalon Actual Play podcast, which I do with Tom Flanagan from Nights and Night. Emily from She's a Super Geek, Kevin from The Glue That Holds Gaming and BS and Mr. Mark Together fame, and Chris Nizek. And we'll be doing a Streets of Avalon Kickstarter for a book and some other cool stuff coming soon. Chris and I are working out the details around that stuff, but that's coming.
All right.
Oh, and just to like throw credit out there, I got five kids and four of them are gamers and I run games for kids on a regular basis. Yeah, so hence that's my credit as to why I'm here.
Yeah, we'll get to all that. This is just the introduction part. This is to highlight you guys and say how awesome you are and me, I guess. No, I don't know. Well, there we go. What about you, Corey? I got some notes on here that I put down that I want to say. I consider you the professional email sender to podcasts, right? So, because you send a lot to Glowburn and Spellburn specifically, right? You got anything else?
Yeah. Well, that seems to be how I'm primarily known. I started with emailing when I got back into gaming a lot of the podcasts. And so, yeah, I'm kind of all over the place. DM Kojo I go by just because one of the shows I listened to already had a DM Corey, so I figured got to differentiate. So I went with Kojo's an old high school nickname. So a middle school teacher, teach 7th grade social studies, and I've been back into gaming for about 7 years now, since going on hiatus after high school.
7 years. I feel like the first time I met you was like 3 or 4 years ago at GaryCon, is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, the GaryCon, let's see, so this was my fourth GaryCon that I went to last year. So yeah, so 4 years ago, I think, my first GaryCon, I remember we met when Doug and Adam were running dueling DCC tables. We were basically two parties at two different tables with the same objective.
Are we men and women?
And led to a lot of player versus player. What's that?
Was it a group of men and a group of women, or was that a different one?
No, it was a mixed group.
Oh, okay. Because there was one I thought that we were all... I don't remember, I guess. Is that the same one where Rick Hull had a character named Hobbs? She Hobbs or something?
That no, might have been. Rick was at the other table, but...
You were at my table then. All right, good.
Yes.
Got our asses kicked, I think.
Yes.
Mechanoids. Was it DCC Mechanoids, right?
DCC Mechanoids, that's right.
Yeah, see, I do remember that.
Thank Doug for that one.
Yeah, well, always thank Doug for everything, I think, right?
Exactly.
I met you through Sean at GaryCon maybe last year. No, Game Hole.
Yeah, I think
maybe Game Hole.
Last year, Game Hole Con. Yeah.
Game Hole, actually.
Yeah, it was at Game Hole. You showed up and you're like, hey, I'm Hobbs. I'm that guy. I'm like, oh, yeah, you've written in the show. We've talked about stuff. You know, kind of online type of thing. And then next thing you know, we're hanging out, bullshitting. And I ended up spending last Sunday with you drinking beer and trading games. So it's kind of like Hobbs is kind of like a fungus, man. You know, Corey, you get him on, you just can't get him off. It's like an athlete's foot thing. You hooked up with Hobbs, you just can't get away.
I've been trying to get him off for 4 years. It's not working.
I am kind of tenacious like that, people say. I don't know. But we should talk about the swap really quick, maybe. So I had been talking since GameholeCon last year in November that, hey, we should have a state line. There's enough of us around. We should get together and instead of selling it on Goblin Emporium or whatever, just like, let's share some games. And if you're not playing it, let somebody else play it. And I finally basically just told Wayne he should just come. And then we finally got you and Sean and then VC and my buddy Bird all came. And we met at a brewery and I did more drinking than I did swapping, I think. But
that's a cool idea. I like that.
The neat thing about it, Corey, is that because if you're selling something like Goblins Emporium or you're selling it to Noble Knight, you're basically selling it for credit, right? Because you're just going to turn around and buy another game with it. Now, if I sell games, I'm selling old games I don't want for more gaming money. It's like I'm selling my crack for new crack or something. I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Yeah, that is.
But it was just cool to be able to just have a pile of books in front of us and say, this is my stuff. Who's interested? And then, yeah, I want this. And what will you take for that? Oh, that seems about fair. And, you know, we're just passing stuff around. So it was a good time.
It worked pretty well, except for Sean was stuck with his GURPS stuff when he came. When he left and when he came. I was trying to empty some stuff out, but I feel like my bag was more full when I brought it home than it was when I took it. So
I can see that.
It was pretty cool. It was fun. All right, so let's move on a little bit and we'll talk about what we've been playing recently. I usually like to talk to my guests. A lot of time I play games with them, but with you two, I mean, I don't ever think I've played with you, Brett, but I, like you said, Corey, we've played some DCC at conventions before.
Right.
What's anything else that maybe you've been playing recently that you want to talk about, Corey?
Well, I just finished the Frostfang Expedition from Purple Sorcerer with my gaming club, and that was pretty fun. We're getting ready to start The Tower Out of Time is the next adventure I'm going to roll them into. That's mostly what I've been playing, a little Fantasy Flight Star Wars here and there, and gearing up for some Star Frontiers.
All right, yeah, whenever you're ready.
I love the hell out of that game, man. That is such a fun game.
I usually play every year at GaryCon. I run a Star Frontiers event or two, and I promised Hobbs I'd get an online group running here at some Star Frontiers soon. So
awesome.
Other than that, pretty much just mostly DCC. I dabble in Savage Worlds a little bit, but mostly I've just been reading that. I haven't played much of it yet. I played a little bit of Savage Rifts with my son a couple weeks ago, and that was pretty fun.
That sounds cool. You're invited to that game, by the way, Brett. You're one of the people on the list that we were talking about, Corey and I were. So,
oh, sweet. It'll come down to time because of just being so damn busy.
Yeah.
That's scheduling. At least it's you don't have to drive anywhere, so that's what's nice about that. All right, cool. What about you, Brett? You got any games you want to talk about?
Let's see. I've got a 5e game I'm running at home for my kids this summer, so they wanted to do a campaign. It's been a long time. We've done a lot of one-shots lately, so like, I want to do a campaign in summer. We don't have to go to school. I'm like, all right, that's cool. And then my oldest boy can get in on it before he just graduated from high school, before he ships out to Air Force Basic in September. We want to get as much gaming as we can because he'll be out for a while, obviously. And then, let's see, I've got a DCC campaign going with my half of my home group. Has about, I don't know, 15 guys in it. And depending who can make it, we ended up kind of splitting it into two pieces. So the core of us are playing a DCC campaign running and also running a Lamentations of the Flame Princess game with a smaller subset of them. And then I'm playing, for the first time in a very long time, in a 5e game with Emily on the Wednesday evening podcast All-Stars thing that Chris is doing. So the Streets of Avalon, officially we're done recording that. So Emily's running a game. I'm playing in that. Every other, and then my buddy is running the 5e Curse of Strahd, the Ravenloft setting, and that's been a blast so far because he's made that really, really freaking creepy and really nasty fun. So that's a good time too.
That sounds cool. So I'm playing 5th edition with Chris. I'm still playing that character Denisha that I crowdsourced at Hobbs and Friends of the OSR, and my awesome listeners made up this character for me.
That's awesome.
She's been pretty fun. She is a nasty sorceress, so that's fun. And our hex crawl with Paul Wolf, Philic Isles, using Labyrinth Lord. We hadn't played it for a while because Paul's been a loser and hasn't been running it, but we got back into it on Sunday, so that was pretty fun. I don't know how often you guys listen to this podcast, but I usually try to have this little segment called Everything About You, which is a throwback to Ugly Kid Joe. So
I had that on single, dude. I had the single back in the day. That was like you break up with somebody and that'd be playing in the car, you know. That's what that nice. Was.
I like right. it. All right, so like I used to say, I like to try to give a little piece about myself that listeners might not know, and hopefully the guests can do the same. So for me this week or this episode is I have four cats. We do not have a large house. There's three people that live here, and the cats pretty much rule the roost. I mean, we had Corey's dog, and we talked about your guys' dogs before the show, but for me, four cats is sometimes can be a little much, but I got one of them laying on me. She's the one who's noisy all the times during episode recording. So what about you? What about you, Brett?
If you listen to the podcast, you know I hunt, so that's old school. You know, I teach martial arts. I have 17 tattoos there.
17. Wow. All right, what's your favorite?
I like my back piece quite a bit. It's a large Pacific Northwest killer whale style Inuit design. I don't walk around often without my shirt on, so people don't always get a chance to bask in the glory that is my back. But it's one of my favorite bits. I like that one. And I must say, though, I've got I was bold, and I got my wife's name on my chest, and I got ones for my kids. I don't have names for the kids, but I've got bear claws on the inside of my arms for my two little ones when they were born, because they used to growl like little bear cubs when they wanted me to pick them up. So I got those. And I've got a nautical star with red and blue for my stepkids. So it turned out pretty cool.
Nice. As long as that that Inuit whale isn't a tramp stamp, I guess we'll be okay.
No, it's much higher. It's much, much higher, much higher. I'll show you my tramp stamp later.
Oh, gosh. I did that. I walked into that one. What about you, Corey? You got anything you want to talk about?
Well, one thing a lot of people don't know about me is I had the honor of being dunked on by a former NBA player, Sean Kemp.
Oh, nice.
When I was in high school at a basketball camp, I was a freshman and he was a senior. And we were doing rotation pickup games, and I rotated on to Sean Kemp, and he dunked on me twice. And the team captain said, "Nope, you don't get to guard him anymore." And I rotated out.
So was that like the most demoralizing basketball thing, or was that like all inspiring?
It was actually pretty awe-inspiring being a freshman, and it was already at that point being talked about him maybe going straight to the NBA.
Yeah, he was a stud.
You know, so it's kind of a fun claim to fame.
He was like my first favorite player, I think, in the NBA when I started, because that would have been, what, 90 or so?
Yeah, it would have been 89 okay. Was when I was, 89.
Yeah, so, wow. Yeah, I remember Sean Kemp, he was a stud. All right, so that's awesome. It's pretty interesting what people end up talking about in that small segment. But all right. So all right, let's move on. So this is the main topic. I don't have like a specific, this is why we're doing this about, you know, kids and gaming, but I was hoping we might be able to wrap it around to the OSR somehow. But so the topic is kids and gaming, and I know, well, I know why you guys are here because I asked you here, but why don't you guys tell me? So Corey, why don't you go ahead and start? Why were you a good guest for this episode?
Oh, sure. Well, like I mentioned earlier, I'm a middle school teacher, and a couple years ago in just kind of talking about some of my life experiences and hobbies and interests, and Gary Kahn came up and D&D came up, and kids were asking questions like, is that a video game? What is that? They had no idea what it was. And so as I got talking about it, a bunch of kids expressed interest in trying the game out. And I was obviously big into DCC. So I thought, well, that's great. So I started up a lunch club. And the last year I was running during my lunch and my planning period 3 days a week. And so that was pretty intense. I was running DCC. I was running some D6 Star Wars. This year, the club continued. I was only running one period out of the day instead of two based because of my schedule. But again, a lot of DCC. We did a helped play test the new Top Secret game that is out on Kickstarter now.
New World Order. Very cool.
New World Order. Yep. So my club was part of the playtesters. We did a little playtesting for Frontier Space, the retro clone of Star Frontiers that's out there right now in playtesting. So we've had a chance to play a lot of different games. It's been a lot of fun.
That sounds great. I really appreciate you being on. And that was, I had met you 4 years ago, and then 2 years ago, I think, during the beer exchange, we talked at length about some of that stuff, and I was really impressed with all that. So thanks for coming on and talking about this.
Thank you.
What about you, Brett? Why were you a good choice?
Well, I spilled it at the beginning that I've got five kids and four of them are gamers. I actually got my middle daughter. She is going to turn 19, freshman at UW-Madison. And we were up at my family's cabin this last 4th of July. And Connor, AJ, and Alana, the other three, wanted to play D&D. And she's like, well, I don't want to be left out. Fine, I'll play this stupid game. And oh my God, she like just dove in. When she got in and got a taste of blood, killed her first monster, she's hooked. We get back home. Connor's got to go to work. And I'm talking about the little kids running a campaign, and Rhiannon comes up and goes, can I play? Can I try? Yeah, sure. Here's a pre-gen. Off you go. So I think I got her hooked. But I started running for my kids, and then AJ, for his 11th birthday, he wanted a D&D party. So I ran a D&D game for him and his buddies. And then even before that, I started working with the DC Everest Gaming Club, which is how I got involved in Evercon. And Corey, they started much the same way. Christian Amon, the teacher who started that at the junior high, was really into it. A buddy of mine, his daughter was going to school there. This is long after I graduated from there, of course. All the cool shit happens when I'm gone. But they start a gaming club, and playing over lunch, playing after hours here and there. Next thing you know, they've got, you know, 50, 60 people showing up. They have like a games weekend, and now it's like 18 years later, and I got a 2,000-person convention on my hands. So
that's awesome.
It's crazy what it blows up into, you know, and I'm getting, you know, and it's really cool to see the kids game. So I think that's, we can get into that in a bit, but that's just, it's so fun to do. Once you start gaming, running for kids, and you see how much they really, honest to God, appreciate it, you're hooked, man, every
yeah.
time.
Oh, yeah, I totally believe that. That, like you said, my next question really for you guys is, why do you think it is important to game with kids, and what are some of the rewards or, you know, fulfillment that you get out of it? Could you talk about that a little bit, Corey?
Oh, sure. What I'm really excited about with my club is, you know, a lot of the kids that do come and play are kids who may be a little more introverted, maybe don't do as many activities with the school, other activities. And so seeing the kids interact with each other and making new friends that have this new common interest is exciting. I also really, as a teacher, appreciate the group problem solving aspect of it. And, you know, the imaginative thinking, obviously, in this day and age with so many things of, you know, with screens and games and everything else, you know, I think imagination, unfortunately, is lacking with a lot of kids. And so the ability for them to utilize their imagination in the game, I think, is a lot of fun to watch and see them kind of grow and blossom in that way.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. That makes me think about when you talk about different game systems and maybe the OSR compared to other trad games or story games. One of the defining aspects of the OSR is this idea of not necessarily knowing what the solution is as the game master when you propose a problem. So I think maybe an OSR game would be good for that for kids, because it would even make them think farther out of the box. They don't just have to look at their sheet and then plug in, you know, oh, this is what I should use for this situation. They just hear the situation and then apply what they know or what maybe they even hope can work, and then just try and go for it. Have you seen that? Or?
Oh, for sure. They're definitely outside-the-box thinkers, just because they have a kind of new approach to it, not having been gaming for so many years. Sometimes they make, you know, it makes it, it's actually honestly made me a better game master, because I've had to adapt to things that I certainly didn't expect them to try, and had to kind of go on the fly and deal with those situations, which actually makes it more fun for me too. I mean, it is an exercise of creativity now for me as well, because I'm adapting to, especially when I'm playing DCC with them. Not only am I, you know, does DCC, the system, make things swingy and make me have to be on my toes, but now I've got kids trying crazy things that I just didn't even anticipate. So it does really make it a lot more fun for me too.
Yeah, they can say the damnedest things, and I'm sure that they can come up with the dangest things. That's for sure.
Well, they totally did. They'll take genres from, like, they've watched this anime plus The Hobbit plus this other thing. Oh, I saw this TV thing, and hey, we want to try this. You know, like, I have no idea what half of those pop references are, but sure, let's try that. They do that stuff all the time.
Yeah. Okay, what do you think, Brett? Why is it important to game with kids?
Well, I'll tell you what. One of the pieces that I think I'll say selfish because I don't have a better word right now, but I think Corey touched on it, is that there's a sense of wonderment and, like, shock and awe that we used to have when we were young, up-and-coming gamers. Like, oh, my God, it's a Tarrasque. Oh, I've never seen that. Oh, what's a Lich do? Oh, my God, it's a Eye of Fear and Flame. Oh, my God. And they haven't seen any of that. No matter what you put a kobold in front of them the first time, like, what the fuck is that thing? And they will lose their mind at this little bitty dog-headed reptilian thing that's barking and howling, swinging a stone axe at them. They don't know what that is. And that is so cool. I mean, that's a tip you take right from DCC, right? Describe the monster. Describe it, don't name it, and they'll just lose their freaking minds. And the creativity that they pull together, the ability to take, because you're running the show, right? You're up there, you're game mastering. You can look at that introverted kid and say, hey, you know, Tim, what do you want to do? I've got the one kid I've gamed with a few different times. I look at him and I'm like, you can talk too. So what would you like to do? And he whispers, he's really quiet, he's very shy, but I make everybody else stop. He says his piece. And I say, that's a good idea. Do you guys agree? And just by saying those things, I get to build up this kid's confidence and just help them do and act and work in these groups. And everyone else is like, yeah, oh, wow, that is a really good idea. Good call, man. You know, he's getting clapped on the shoulder. People are cheering because he's got this great kick-ass idea. I mean, one of the guys in the gaming club at Everest, he's in a wheelchair. He's got a little stick to drive around. He cannot walk. It will never, ever happen. And you want to get your ass kicked at chess by a young kid. That's the kid to do it. But he's an amazing gamer. Board games, anything. He'll play, he'll get into it. And it is this wonderful equalizer. You don't have to be a sporty. You don't have to be super smart. You can be anything. You can play this game. And that is a huge draw. And teaching that to kids is big. You have a hobby you can do with just about anybody, man. You don't have to be, you know, gifted athlete dunking on Corey. you can do this whenever.
That's right.
That is great. Oh shit! I feel like I'm Sean now. I just thought of something and forgot it.
Oh, that happens all the time.
I don't know. I lost it. What do you think? You got anything to say about that, Corey? I'll think about it again.
No, that's a good point. I've seen a lot of things come from kids playing the game that I don't necessarily see from them in class. They're engaging in ways socially. It's kind of ironic in that, you know, when we were kids playing, you know, it was considered a game for the social outcasts. But now with all the things kids are so obsessed with their phones and everything, I feel like the kids in my club are being more social than the kids who aren't.
Yeah, I can see that.
That's very true.
So it's kind of flipped in a way. But and I've had a lot of parents be very appreciative of their kids coming home talking about the game, getting excited. I mean, it might be the only thing about school that they want to talk about, but at least to talk about something. And I actually end up running my club during the summers too. This is the second summer I've run it. So I run once a week at a local game store, and I get anywhere between 6 and 11 kids every week playing, and I kind of just drop them in and play with whoever's there. It's great.
Well, another cool piece, Corey, for me, I don't know if you've seen this, is I ran a little storyline. I completely ripped it off from, I can't remember, it was a Dragonlance, a little like sub-story. I can't remember what the hell it was. But I totally ripped off this like winter survival thing. And the kids went, wow, that was a lot of fun. And I said, I got it out of this book. And they went, really? I said, yeah, there's a whole series. And by the end of that summer, like three of the kids had come back to the club like in a couple months, and they've got like the third book in the first trilogy, and they're reading.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's good.
And you do, it's corny, but it really, we've always said this, well, gaming made me read, and I can freaking see it, right? My young daughter, who's 8, loves running games, loves playing, and I tell her that there's a novel about it, and she'll just devour it. Oh, this is like Harry Potter? She'll read all the Harry Potter books. AJ reads all that stuff. They want to devour that stuff because it's more fuel for that wonderful gaming fire. So when they show up, I now have a new thing to throw at Corey, like, hey, I want to do this thing. And then you're like, wow, where'd you get that from? Oh, it's from, you know, Iron Steel, whatever, you know, book they're reading. And like, holy crap, that's really awesome. It's just one more thing that gets them doing smart stuff, you know, expanding their vocabulary, reading, comprehending what they read as they get to the rules. It's, I'm preaching to choir with Corey. He knows all.
Yes, and it also propagates itself. You know, I finally remember what I was trying to think of is, you know, when we were younger or kids or whatever, they said that you should play sports because it can help all the things that sports can do for you, help you build your confidence and camaraderie and being able to interact. And you can learn the same things through gaming, but it's a cooperative effort as opposed to one of conflict and competition, right? Don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I think that that's one of my favorite things about gaming is that it is cooperative and you're not winning at the expense of somebody else. Everybody can have fun at the table and in a sense win. And that's awesome. I see that not just with my kids group, but with the adults I play with, same thing. I mean, we'll have a good time playing, you know, some competitive game, but then it's also nice to flip the switch and say, let's do something that's cooperative and almost, you know, group storytelling in essence. It's always a fun creative exercise.
That's a good point. Some kids will gravitate towards, you know, this type of thing, and other kids like, no, they want to be in the hockey team, and that's where they get it from. And that's absolutely fine and totally cool. You know, I would never say that this hobby makes you a better person than any other hobby. No, no, it just has some really kick-ass facets that are, if it's a thing you're into, where you're thinking your kids might, you know, let your kids try it. And if they like it, then foster it. Let them go with it. You know, it's just, it's really cool. I think Corey's dead right. I've seen it myself as well. And I know he sees it more with being a teacher. I always see it secondhand and with my kids when they come home from school. But it's really cool. I really think it's a great idea.
Yeah, it sounds very sad. It's probably way better than just GMing for a bunch of drunk guys at GaryCon, but...
It totally seems like it is.
So, I mean, I had a lot of fun GMing for Aiden Moore, and like you say, they come up with some interesting ideas, and it's cool to see how they think about it and notice the differences in that. So that is pretty cool. So I like to talk about mechanics and systems, and I was kind of wondering about how we could figure that out, but I think it's a two-part question, really. Do you think there's some specific systems that work better for kids? And also, do you think that you ever see kids latch onto certain systems that have helped you use those maybe for other types of games? Anybody have anything?
You know, I play DCC with my club. It's my favorite game to play right now. But with my own son, when he wanted to play with some kids at his school, his elementary school, he was in fifth grade this year, I got him the Basic Fantasy. Mm-hmm. Books, and those were, I think, you know, obviously much more simplified and didn't have some of the content that DCC has that I didn't think would fly in a fifth grade classroom. So that's been pretty good. I personally also am, you know, I actually started my own son on Mensa or Redbox. You know, I really feel like, you know, that's, you know, there's some really good introductory stuff in there. I remember when I first got that, that's how I started. And there's a good introduction to role-playing and a solo adventure in there. And so I kind of gave him those books and kind of had him start with those. So I still go back to that and think that's pretty good. The only thing that he really struggled with was descending armor class.
I can see that.
I started my group out with Mensa Redbox. I should say my kids out with Mensa Redbox as well, because that's one of the first things I'd done. I have found that when I ran for the gaming club that I love Osric, and when I take that or variation of those kind of skinnier versions of the OSR games, they go over really well because the character sheet is very simple. And when a kid looks at it and sees, you know, strength, intelligence, wisdom, charisma, basic saving throws, there's not like this raft of skills and feats and special. The wizard may have a page or two of different spelly stuff, but it's very, very easy. And because of that, they say, well, what can I do? What do you want to do? And they say, oh, I can do anything. And then I'm like, well, pretty much within reason, you know, figure it out. You have limits based on, you know, you only have a, you know, 12 strength. You can't pick up the giant, throw him across a bridge, kid, but try something. And I have found that one of the cool things to me about the OSR for that, it really, because it's so wide open, is rulings instead of rules, and cool ideas are awesome, even in DCC, because I run that as well. And I think it really resonates well with the kids when they want to try something crunchier, like I've also run Pathfinder for them. They want to play something with more oomph to it. Well, they want to play 5e D&D because that's the new version of D&D. A lot of kids are talking about it. Mm-hmm. But when they've cut their teeth on an OSR game, I think they are able to grok all the other components of it and then move on or move into other game systems easier, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I would say the Moldvay basic is probably, you know, I prefer over Mensur, but that introductory stuff in Mensur is actually really fantastic. Like you say, that solo adventure can really kind of help someone who's never played a role-playing game before figure the game out better than probably any edition that came out before that. So I would definitely agree with that.
I remember talking to Frank at Evercon, because he was up as a special guest a few years back, and he was telling me how he'd specifically was tasked to write that, and he had a woman who was like the front desk lady. She was an operating secretary, phone answering person, and she'd never game before. And his test was to write this thing, give it to her, and see if she understood it, because she'd never played before. So he said, I had a couple people in-house. He said a couple of them had to happen to be women, and I would pass it to, especially the lady at the front desk, and say, read this. Do you get it? She said, I don't know what this means. He'd go back and scribble way back at it to clarify it even more. So I think that diligence and that piece that he put into it really helps to add to its sustainability, so that guys like Corey and I are still pulling out going, hey, this will help my kid learn, you know.
right?
Yeah, that's a good story. And like I say, I really do think that's great, but I still can't say that it's a better Beck Me is better than BX, but we'll move on from there. So you talked about quite a few different systems when you talking about D6 or WEG, Star Wars, and the Top Secret game. Did you find anything in there that they really latched onto? Like, I mean, Top Secret, I mean, we don't have a whole lot of spy stuff now like we did in the 80s, right? So was it kind of hard to get them to grok that genre or anything, Corey?
No, they kind of put their Call of Duty spin on it, I think, okay. Was the biggest
thing. Oh, there you go.
You know, that's awesome. They were really kind of, they kind of played it a lot like they would a video game, I felt like. You know, the kids tend to be more aggressive players anyways, in my experience, and so they're quick to attack, they're quick to jump headfirst into things or into whatever it might be. The new Top Secret system is pretty quick and easy to learn. I mean, being that it was a play test, there were still some kind of kinks that, you know, did throw us off a little bit. But I think the system as a whole is pretty intuitive and pretty easy to understand. The kids seemed to really enjoy it. And they enjoyed being part of a play test and knowing that they're going to get a play tester credit in the book. They were pretty excited about that, just to be part of that. So,
yeah, that is. That sounds cool. And, I mean, I play tested Frontier Space as well with Paul Wolf and our group, and that is a total OSR game. There's no doubt about that. I enjoyed that, and I'm sure that wasn't hard to grok onto anything for them. There's a lot of sci-fi to latch onto now compared to what we had when we were younger, that's for sure.
Yeah, that was good. I mean, we only got through character creation with Frontier Space before the school year ended.
Okay.
So we didn't actually get to play it, but even making the characters felt very OSR for sure.
Yeah, it's quick, and there's not really, they have a little bit of skill system in that, though, so that's maybe a little different for them, and that's pretty interesting. So do you guys have any systems that we haven't talked about yet, specific to gaming with kids that you would like to try or are interested in? I put one system down as the PDQ. That's what I ran for my daughter, which was, Jesus, I don't know, 12 to 14 years ago now. So it was like a Star Wars thing. It's the PDQ system, which is based off of Fudge, if you've never heard of it. So it's free.
Well, Fudge is where Fate came from. So.
Yeah. It's very similar to that kind of. It's just an earlier rendition of it. And I'll put a link to the show notes in that. Do you guys have any other ones that you've used or considered using? Like, isn't there Dagger and Fantasy Kids or something?
I got my daughter. I bought her last year. I think it was last year, the year before GameholeCon. I got her Little Wizards. Which is a short pamphlet-y style, I shouldn't say pamphlet-y, kind of a small book style design. It is it's all geared towards kids living in this coin world that's up, you know, basically a flat coin up and down or light side, dark side. That was kind of fun. You're all wizards and witches trying to figure things out. She's run that for her older brother AJ, and for me, that was a lot of fun.
Cool.
I did, learning what I learned about Ilola Santa's pip system that he put together, and just to talk about, I mean, Sean and I had the luxury of being able to get a hold of Eloy and talk to him on a bonus BS episode and kind of dig into how that system works. It's not out yet, but that thing sounds really freaking cool from like a universal, really easy system that anybody can grab onto. So that would be one that right now I'm actually dying for that Kickstarter to complete out. I mean, it's funded and everything, but I want my book so I can give it a run because I think my kids are going to totally dig it.
Awesome. Do you have anything you'd like to mention, Corey?
The one game I've been wanting to try, well, two things, I guess. I'm going to, with my summer club here, going to do, after this DCC adventure, I'm going to do Savage Worlds, I think a superheroes game. So I'm excited to see how that goes. And then the other game I've been looking at and wanting to try with my club is The Hero's Journey by James Spahn. Okay. It's a pretty good book. I really like it. It's kind of just one digest-sized book, and it's an all-inclusive game. It's similar to Swords and Wizardry.
Yeah, listeners to Hobbs and Friends are probably quite familiar with The Hero's Journey after my rant about the Three Castle Awards. So
I'd be remiss if I didn't throw this one out there too. No Thank You Evil, that Monty Cook Games has put out by Shauna Germain Built. That is supposed to be an incredibly kick-ass kids game. Now, the interesting thing is, and I think Corey could attest this as well, is that sometimes there's kids games, like they're almost so kiddie in a way where they're built for young children, like preteens, you know, grade schoolers. And sometimes, depending on the the type of kid or whatever, a really simple kiddie game, I don't know the other way to say it right now, might be better for them than even a Savage Worlds might be almost too much for like an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old, depending again on the kid. Some kids totally grok that stuff and other ones don't.
Yeah, I could see that. All right, did you have anything else you wanted to finish up before I interrupted you, Corey? Sorry about that.
No, you're fine.
All right, cool. All right, so that's kind of the product spotlight. As I've mentioned, these games, and I'll put some links in the show notes, or Chris will. Anyway.
Yeah, I got to ask you, man. Are you going to run a kids game at Game Hole Con? They got an entire kids track, man.
Yeah, I know. I heard your episode about it.
Are you going to do it, though? You going to run a game for some kids?
I had planned on it, but I
Come
could.
On. Don't be a wuss. Just look, Corey and I told you how fracking amazing it is, man. Get in there. What are we doing?
I'll consider this.
Well, you know what's funny is the very first time I ran for my club, I'm running DCC. I'm running Sailors on the Starless Sea. And I knew I was going to be in for an interesting ride when the party gets to the keep right at the beginning of the adventure, and all of a sudden the kids like scatter like shotgun, like their characters are trying to enter the keep in five different directions at the same time. And because it's a funnel, of course, they're each running four characters, and they're not only are the players going different directions, they're splitting their characters saying, well, I want one to go over here and one to go over there, and this one's going to jump in the sinkhole. And I'm like, jump in the sinkhole?
Why would you do that?
Harvey Stroh did not write anything about what happens when you jump in the sinkhole. So I sent him to the Purple Planet and said, we'll get to them later. Nice. Set those characters aside. So, so from day one, I knew that playing with kids was going to be an interesting experience, but a lot of fun.
Sorry, do you have anything before we move on that you want to add about that, Brett?
No, I'm good. That's an awesome story, man. I love that.
All right, good. All right. So very briefly, I'm going to talk about this on the state of the OSR is there's people trying to define the OSR, and all I can wish them is good luck. I steer clear of that on my show just because it's – I don't even know if you can do it really. But if you want to, you can listen – other people do it. You can go to listen to episode 28 of Tabletop Babble, and Gregory Blair, Humza – K, I can't remember what his last name is, and James Delmato, I think, they talked about that in that episode. And Old House Rules just had a cool little article on their blog about it, which was pretty interesting. So if you're interested in that, go check it out. Otherwise, I'm going to move on to thanking a shout out to my patrons, Richard Merrill Fraser, Steve Siggity, and Matt Jackson. You three got the lucky shout out today. If anyone else wants to be a patron, you can find it at patreon.com, OSR and Hobbs. I'm just going to run through this stuff quick. Is there anything you guys wanted to mention or anything that you guys wanted to say? Oh, why don't I ask you this? If someone wants to talk to you guys about gaming with kids, how would they get in touch with you, Corey?
Easiest way, probably on Google+, is Corey DM Kojo Gosman, or Facebook. I'm in a lot of the RPG groups on there. Would be the easiest way probably to get a hold of me.
Awesome. What about you, Brett?
I would go to the Gaming BS community on Google+ or our Facebook community, and Brett B., out there, you can find me, or just throw it out there saying, hey, Brett, I have a question. And if it's in the community, Sean will find it. If I don't, and I will get drug into the conversation. So, yeah, that's probably the best way to get me. If you want to tweet at Gaming BS too, I watch that too. So,
or Fofford1, right? Isn't that your personal?
Well, yeah, Fofford1 is my Twitter handle. That's right. I've completely forgot what my own handle is.
So if you want to be an awesome podcast emailer, then you could email HobbsandFriends@misdirectedmark.com, and I will probably read it on the air or at least talk about it. You can check out the website at HobbsandFriends.com, or you can find me on Twitter at HobbsIndeed, or the Twitter for the podcast at OSRNHobbs. Honestly, Google+ is like, that's pretty much where I've met all the people I talk to. And I have a Google+ community called Hobbs and Friends of the OSR, strangely enough. And we now have 329 members. We're about to pass Misdirected Mark, and Gaming and BS is next on our line. We're coming right at you, Brett.
The problem is half your listeners are my listeners, dude.
Both of them. I take the listeners from everybody else.
No, I'm kidding. No, it's totally fine.
It's true, though.
Chris and I were talking about this once a while back. Sneezak and I were saying, I'm like, you know, as long as the Venn diagram of your cool people, my cool people continue to stay intertwined, I get to meet cool dudes like Corey. So this is awesome.
Yeah, it's all good. Yeah. So I really appreciate, you guys coming on. Thanks a lot. Is there any last words you've got about gaming with kids or anything in general you want to talk about?
I would just say, I would just encourage people to seek out opportunities to game with kids. You know, if Game Hole's got a kids track, that's awesome. I mean, I think it might seem intimidating, but it's actually not. They don't really, you know, they're not going to be upset if something doesn't go their way. They're just, they bounce back. They're actually more flexible than some of the adults I play with.
I can see that.
I encourage you to try it out if you haven't already.
The other thing I've told people is that you've got your basic starter sets out there. You've got some really cool intro stuff. Give the gift of gaming, as corny as that sounds. Like on Christmas, you got that kid in your family who might be interested. It's a great opportunity to drop a starter set on somebody or a nice slim OSR clone or something. Get people in, get the kids, ask them about it, talk about it, see if they want to do it, and then be ready to step up and say, I'll run that game for you. Because as Corey said, you will be incredibly pleasantly surprised. You're going to have a hell of a good time.
Yeah, that's great. Hey, they're the next generation. They're the ones coming up. If you don't want this hobby to stay, to die, or, you know, peter off, you got to get your kids involved, right? If it's not your kids, then somebody else's. That's what I say. So
that's right.
Like I say, thanks again, guys. Good night, everybody. Hobbs and Friends of the OSR is part of the Misdirected Mark Network, the media arm of Encoded Designs. Say good night, fellas.
Good night, fellas.